Welcome back to another great episode of the Uncharted Podcast. I have Michael, who's the founder and CEO of WorkOS. Michael, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks so much for having me. This is great.
Yeah, of course. It's a pleasure. So we'd like to kick it off with a quick personal business bio. Obviously, this week's been big for you. So if you want to give some spotlight to the listeners on that context.
We announced our Series B financing, which we raised $80 million, led by Green Oaks, which is a really incredible firm. So we're pretty well-financed at this point. I started WorkOS about 3.5 years ago, really from a lot of learnings and experience that I had from the previous company I had co-founded called Nihilus, where we built an email client and a bunch of other email technology. That's really how I got my start in the SaaS world. So really excited to talk about that, some of the stuff we're doing at WorkOS today, where we're going, and just kind of overall the SaaS ecosystem.
Yeah, so you've, at a very young age, you've had two very successful companies you've established. So from the Nihilus experience, what was like one or two things you learned? Maybe it was lessons you learned the hard way, or things you guys maybe did well that you wanted to make sure you carry over to WorkOS?
Yeah, it's a great question. So Nihilus today is really an infrastructure company selling communication technology. So APIs for kind of sending email and managing calendars and stuff like that. When we started the company, we actually started it to build more of a productivity-focused app. We actually built this email client that was designed to be a replacement for Gmail and Outlook. It was called Nihilus Mail. And this is before Slack. And so the idea was we were going to build a product that people would use every day, they'd bring to work, and just try to become the dominant communication tool at people's jobs. I was obsessed with email. I still kind of am a little bit, but I had sketchbooks full of ideas. The code base for Nihilus actually started off as my capstone CS project at MIT. I'd been thinking about email products for a long time. And so when we started the company, really designed it around building this incredibly well-crafted product experience, you know, going down to level, pixel level details for icons. The app was really beautiful. I even hired a musician to make custom sounds, notification sounds for it. Like, we were really obsessed around the experience of it. So we launched this thing and we get it out into the hands of users, and people really like it. And they start using it more and more, and they bring it to work. We won some awards. People still come to me and tell me about having used this product, but we hit all this friction when we actually tried to monetize it. And I think this is one of the biggest learnings that I had from that experience, was really we had conceptualized a great product, but not really how it was situated wider in the market, how we were going to sell it, how the pricing was going to work, you know, some, from like a distribution perspective, how it would grow to be commercially viable. That wasn't part of the story getting started. It was really just about how do we make the absolute best product possible. And, you know, at the time when I was kind of in my, you know, my like early mid 20s, very much was a student of the kind of Paul Graham startup ideology, just make something people want, make the best product possible, and everything else will fall in if you can get that product market fit. And I think that's definitely necessary for success. It's very hard to build a business around a product that people don't like. But there's this entire other piece around actually the harmony between the product experience and actually how you structure the pricing and the go-to-market and everything that I was just really, to be honest, like completely unaware of. I came out of the CS program at MIT. They don't really teach you how to like structure a business in that. And so I think what we did, we executed extremely well on this product from a design and experience level, but really underinvested in the go-to-market side. And you know, that had repercussions around us at being able to commercialize it. And even just see this problem around enterprise readiness. I'm really excited to talk about that because that's what we're doing at WorkOS. But I think just one of the, you know, to answer your question, one of the big takeaways was when starting a company and when kind of thinking about a new venture, you know, the tendency for technical or product-minded people is definitely to just focus exclusively on the product experience, get that really, really good, and then hope that everything works out. And that's not always the case. Sometimes that works, but it's not always the case. And I think it's... I would challenge people when they're thinking about new products to think about the harmony between their go-to-market and the product experience, essentially from day one.
You keep using this term enterprise readiness. And for folks that, for whatever reason, they don't have context on the other side of this call to that, what does that mean? And how are you guys, like, why did you want to tackle this problem?
It's kind of a weird thing to work on. I remember when we were starting WorkOS, I got a lot of raised eyebrows from my friends and people were kind of confused. Happy to break it down. So If you are a company building a SaaS product and you're really following kind of modern SaaS methodology, what you typically try to do is kind of a bottom-up motion. People used to call this freemium. Now it's called like product-led growth, PLG. This is what companies like Dropbox and Slack and Asana and Airtable and all these organizations have done. So you build a great product experience, you allow people to come inbound, start using it. And then the idea is over time, you can sell larger and larger teams and groups of people and eventually sell to bigger and bigger companies. So that early product market fit is what propels you into the market where you're really going to capture the most value, those larger organizations. And when I say enterprise here, it's kind of more like commercial mid-market, like just larger organizations, something above, you know, a few hundred people. When you actually want to go sell to those companies, there's a set of features that they need to use essentially in order to manage it at scale. And these are features that are exclusively used by the IT department. So if you've built something like Airtable, you know, you're focusing on the spreadsheet aspect of it and the calculations and the UI, but the IT admin really cares about how the users are going to sign in. Maybe they need to authenticate with Okta or another identity system. They care a lot about how the users are going to be added or removed, like connecting to their directory system. They might need to have like visibility into how it's being used, some kind of compliance certification or some audit logging or things like this. And these are all features that if you don't have them in your app, you literally can't go sell to those companies. Procurement and IT will block it. You might be able to get a small team to start using it, but you certainly am not going to be able to sell it wall to wall. And this is really what it means to become enterprise ready, is to start adding these types of features to your product so that you can go sell to those bigger organizations. Becoming enterprise ready is pretty complicated too. A lot of companies stumble at it or sort of fail at it. It's usually a persona that IT admin, they've never experienced or worked with. I certainly had a lot of trouble empathizing with those groups of people because I'd never worked in IT. And the idea of needing to add all these features that the end users don't care about, but IT, you know, extremely important to them, is sort of a foreign concept. And so that's what we're trying to do with WorkOS. That's really what the company is here, is trying to make it easy to add these features. We're like an API platform for adding enterprise features to your app. But I think the phrase enterprise ready, it encompasses a lot of other things as well. You know, if you think about compliance certifications, like you might need to become SOC 2 compliant and you know, get that certification. That's a step of becoming enterprise ready. There's a lot of companies that help you do that today. Another thing is changing your pricing and packaging. You know, the way enterprise companies buy software, they're probably not going to, you know, if it's a $100,000 a year deal, they're probably not going to just swipe the credit card. You know, they're probably going to want that on a PO or to budget annually. So there's all these other things that structurally go into becoming enterprise ready. But what I found at Nihilus, and really when we were building this app, what I saw was there's this set of really just technology pieces that you need. And up until we built WorkOS, every company was having to build this stuff in-house again and again. So I'm really just trying to structurally solve this sort of weird infrastructure problem, but it's pretty omnipresent across everyone in the SaaS ecosystem. And there's just there's a tremendous amount of stuff there to build. We haven't solved it yet. We're really still just getting started.
What are some of your suggestions to founders that have this like bottoms up approach, but they also want to expand into the enterprise? Like, what are some of the things that you've learned that you want to maybe share with the audience?
It depends a lot, I think, on the product and the company. I think there's a lot of nuance here. And it also depends on kind of how the business model is structured. So if you're selling a product that kind of right out of the gate, you know, costs several tens of thousands of dollars a year, there's going to be a big implementation step in order for the customer to succeed with it. Maybe there's some data migration that has to happen. Say you're building like a new CRM or something like that, like kind of a enterprise focused CRM. The way you're going to go to market with that is by having, you know, a kind of a post-sales success team that will help do the integration, maybe some training. You'll be a lot more hands-on with those types of customers. And I think in that scenario, you're already probably working with IT. You're probably already connecting with those groups of people. It's not like transitioning to them. What happens otherwise, though, for other types of companies that maybe are selling smaller seats or smaller organizations, they'll, you know, build this bottom-up self-serve experience, and that will attract individuals to start using it. Like an example, this would be something like Figma. So design teams adopt Figma. It starts spreading within the team. And you know, the initial user there is really an evangelist for the product within the company, and you're trying to get that person to spread it across the organization. They might not be the economic buyer, they might not be long-term the person that kind of owns the account, but it's really, really critical to get that person to get the rest of the organization to engage with it. And that's what your product managers are probably focused on, helping that person invite people and having it spread. But at some point that transitions. And at some point you'll have a larger team using it and you'll need to kind of sidestep and start engaging with whoever it is in IT or procurement or the group really that manages software infrastructure, the tools that that enterprise organization uses. And I think that jump, when you move from the single people using it to talking to people in IT, it's a really big leap. I've given a talk about this a few years ago called Crossing the Enterprise Chasm. And there's a lot of stuff technically you have to do. That's what I was just talking about with single sign-on and all that. But it's really just this like structural shift you have to make as an organization in your messaging, your product marketing, like materials you put together, even like the framing of the experience that people have or the value. It's kind of night and day how different it is. And when companies try to take the marketing that works for individuals and apply that to people in IT, it doesn't mix. You know, it's almost like speaking a different language. And I think this transition is where a lot of companies get tripped up in. Some people decide to just like stay in that self-serve world and, you know, kind of like never move beyond it. But the downside is there is you miss out on the enterprise, you know, revenue and the stickiness of those companies, and you don't really capture the full value. And so the organizations I've seen this do really, really well, they're able to make this transition. And it almost becomes like a cultural transition they have to make as a company, kind of like a philosophical transition in a way. And it has ripple effects also in terms of how you build out the go-to-market team and how you train people. And, you know, even thinking about like comping people in sales, if a tremendous amount of your revenue 3 years forward is coming from account expansion, you want to probably, include that somehow in your compensation plan. That's a really complicated thing to figure out today. So I think there's just like a lot of small details and nuance there where every company is a little bit different, and it really does depend on like what audience you're landing with, how it's expanding, and like long-term what your goals are on getting the whole organization to adopt the product.
What are examples of companies that have done this really well?
One company that I think has done this actually extremely well is Slack over the last several years. And Slack's not a WorkOS customer. They had done a lot of this before we even started the company. But I've just like really studied their motion, and you know, Slack had so much powerful bottom-up motion, and that like really spread across an organization, like would take companies kind of like wildfire. And Slack was pretty good about starting to add in the capabilities and features that only people in IT really care about. And so what you'll notice is if you're an individual user using Slack in like a 10-person team in your company, and then say you go join a company with 10,000 people and you start using Slack, it feels about the same to you. It feels like the same product experience. But actually, the version that's being deployed there is pretty different. There's a ton of different controls and integrations with the IT system. There's tons of compliance stuff in it. It's really a different beast to be able to support, you know, a larger company at scale. But they've been able to maintain the same quality bar on the individual product experience on the end users. I think that's why people love it. And then satisfy IT, you know, in some of the biggest organizations in the world. They've even built some really novel encryption technology around kind of who manages the keys so they can get some of these, you know, kind of big like Fortune 10 companies on board. So they've done a really good job that I've definitely admired and learned from them. Another company that I've seen do this recently in the past few years, who actually is a WorkOS customer, is Webflow. So Webflow, maybe a year and a half ago, maybe a little bit more than that, integrated WorkOS. They were actually one of our first kind of larger customers, less than a year after we had announced. And Webflow, you know, it's a design tool essentially for publishing websites. So designers can use Webflow to make these incredibly rich web experiences without needing to write code themselves and learn HTML and CSS and all that. It's extremely empowering for people in the design world. And at the time, Webflow had a lot of individual designers using it or like design agencies using it, but they were finding more and more big companies were wanting to like move their web properties to Webflow because it makes it so much easier to iterate and ship stuff. And like our WorkOS website is on Webflow, you know, like we love this product. And so they found this pull into the enterprise. They were getting more and more people saying, hey, we want to use this at scale, but Webflow didn't have the features to actually sell to those organizations. And so they used WorkOS to add just single sign-on, unlocked a bunch of deals. And we've seen that company just kind of explode into the enterprise market. I think they just announced recently they're doing over $100 million in revenue. The company's just, you know, on a tear. It's incredible. And that growth, you know, it's not necessarily in terms of number of new users. It's really like them moving into this new market, kind of expanding their TAM in a way. And they've done other stuff around the packaging and pricing, but fundamentally also the Webflow product didn't really change that dramatically. It's really still the same experience. It's just allowing these bigger organizations to fully adopt it across their team, like wall to wall. That's allowed them to grow revenue in that way. And I think it's one of these things that crossing the enterprise chasm, when you start thinking about this and examining the SaaS ecosystem, you can really tell the companies that have done it and haven't done it. Another example, maybe the last one I'll give, which is sort of less relevant today because I think they've done better, is Box versus Dropbox. So, you know, over 10 years ago when I was an undergrad, I worked at Dropbox for a few months. And at the time, Box was kind of building the enterprise version of Dropbox. Dropbox is more of a consumer product. It really like focused on the individuals and small teams. And Box was built for the enterprise. And that separation really allowed Box to go win those deals and grow in that way. And Dropbox had to play catch up eventually. So I think there's also this thing where if you don't become enterprise ready and don't focus on it, you risk potentially a competitor taking that market from you. If you've done all the innovation in the product space, like, you know, like Webflow for enterprise should just be Webflow. Like, you know, Slack for enterprise should be Slack. It shouldn't be another product. And occasionally that's played out where it's allowed, you know, either an incumbent or a new enterprise focused company to come and take that market. But I have to warn people, once you start thinking about this, it's easy to obsess around this. It's so interesting, I think, just kind of seeing how this is defined the long-term success of businesses or not. And it really doesn't have to do with product market fit specifically. It's more this like later business mechanic around how they capture the value that they've created.
Before we say our goodbyes, the one question we like to end every episode with is if you could go back to any time, this could be at MIT, this could be at Nihilist, any time, what would the wiser, older Michael, what advice would you give your young self?
I tend to not really have regrets around stuff in the past. I think everything I've done, I've learned like a tremendous amount from. And so I'm not sure if I would go back and like swap experiences by telling myself, you know, don't do this or go do this other thing. But I think, you know, I mentioned this a little bit before, but one of the things that I have just deeply learned and internalized that maybe if you would have talked to, you know, 23-year-old Michael 10 years ago, what he probably would have said, is just really thinking holistically about businesses and products. Like I love great product experiences and creating things that people, you know, can use in their life or kind of change the way they think or enable people to build new things. I love building developer tools for that reason. It's pretty easy to become myopic around that and be so focused on just creating that magical aha product experience. It's so satisfying to do. But I think if you're not considering the wider ecosystem around how it's going to be used, how people are going to adopt it, how you're going to charge money for it, who pays for it, how that fits into the value chain, just all these other elements, you're sort of putting that magic at risk. You're introducing a liability. And I used to think of that as a separate thing, really as like a separate thing you would figure out later on, or you kind of bolt it onto the side. And now the way I think about it is it's the same. It's really just creating one big system where the go-to-market can actually like feed more of the product experience. Like for WorkOS, we have like a usage-based pricing model, which is pretty different than a lot of other types of companies. And it's extremely intentional. And it was designed from the bottom up to from the very first days to have this type of business model. And so I guess like what I would go back is just kind of to tell myself, like, look, structuring and thinking about the go-to-market with the same level of kind of ambition or originality or clarity as the product experience, you know, will result in more long-term success versus kind of having it be something that you're expecting to figure out later on and might be surprised by, as I was in the case of, you know, the Nihilist Mail product. But, you know, for WorkOS, we've really done that from the early days. And I think that's why, I think it's one of the reasons why it's working so well, to be honest.
Well, this episode has been phenomenal, to say the least. And it reminds me of a quote someone told me a long time ago, which is your product engineering team determines like who wins, but your go-to-market determines by how much. And I got to tell you, I've been very impressed and your learnings have been a very good testament of how you're building WorkOS. So thank you for being a great friend. Thank you for paying it forward, Michael. And thank you for coming on the show. So we will put Michael's contact information, LinkedIn and Twitter and whatnot in the show notes. Reach out. Thank you for coming on the show, everybody. And until next time, be well, be safe, and catch you on the next episode.